The first of them is the understanding of meditation as a science of the mind. There's a quality of it being a science. And the power of the Buddha's teaching was precisely his deep and profound understanding of exactly how things are happening, of the nature of the Dhamma, of the nature of this mind-body process. Our lives are not unfolding by chance. They're not unfolding by accident. They're not unfolding haphazardly. It's unfolding according to certain laws. One of the most important of these laws of nature, which we can discover and understand, is the law of cause and effect. It's very obvious, I think, to most of us how this works in the physical world, that certain actions have consequences. Timely example of this, now in our culture, for the planet. We see that when we treat the environment in a certain way, when we pollute the environment, when we take those kinds of actions, these actions don't just drop into a void. These actions bring about a certain result. They have consequences. There are holes in the ozone layer, and there's global warming, and there's foods we can't eat anymore, and the list goes on and on. There's a law of cause and effect at work. When we take care of the environment, when we take care with our actions in that way, other results follow. This is not difficult for us to see or understand. We can see both the immediate consequences and the long-term consequences. Genuine wisdom in our lives has to do with understanding the relationship of action to result. This is the wisdom that we need to cultivate, that we need to explore. The relationship of action to result. The problem is, it's not always obvious. It's not always obvious what the consequences of a particular action are. And so we get confused, or we're in doubt. Sometimes pleasure or gratification in the moment, something that feels really good, actually is leading us to suffering or causing suffering for others. And something that may feel like suffering in the moment, like the first day of a meditation retreat, actually has very beneficial consequences, even though they may not be apparent right now. To develop this genuine wisdom in our lives, the relationship of action to result, takes the cultivation of a very special kind of awareness. We need to develop our capacity to pay attention to our lives, to pay attention to our experience in a very careful way. Because we need to go beyond the surface appearance of things. The surface, the appearance, doesn't always reveal the deepest truth. Just like there are physical laws in nature which can be explored, what the Buddha discovered was the same kind of natural laws in the mind. He was able to see with such clarity and such profundity what kinds of actions, what kinds of mind states create suffering. And he was able to see with this tremendous clarity and tremendous depth what kind of actions bring us to freedom, bring about a real happiness in our lives. There's a very profound implication of the fact that this is a lawful process, and that what we're discovering is the laws governing the mind. And the implication is, precisely because it is lawful, we can each make this journey for ourselves. We can each make this journey of discovery, of understanding. It's not a question of somebody having some experience and then revealing it to us, and then we either believe or disbelieve it. That's not what this practice is about. The Buddha's great message to people was, come and see. Here is the way to do it, come and see for ourselves. So that's the tremendous challenge for us. So meditation as a science of mind means that it's lawful, that we can discover it, and it means that we need to sharpen the power of our observation. The forms and techniques that we use on retreat are for this purpose. They're for the purpose of sharpening the observing power of the mind, so we can look more deeply, so we get beyond the appearance, get beyond the surface. When the mind is lazy, when the mind is sloppy, when the mind is inattentive, we don't see things clearly. And so what we have to do is to wake up our minds. We need to train them in such a way so that we are attentive and we are observant. And then the whole world, the whole nature of our mind is revealed. So what are these forms and techniques and disciplines that we employ in the service of this? It's very simple. It's not complicated. You know, and as you've seen, either for this past week or just starting today, for those of you who came, we use the form of sitting and walking. Very simple. How do we spend the day? Sit and walk. You go home after 10 days, people are going to ask you what you did. I sat, I walked, I sat, I walked, I sat, I walked. It's very simple, and it serves a very deep purpose, which is the simplicity of the discipline allows us to begin to calm the mind down and to collect the attention. Even during the very first days of a retreat, from the very beginning, people develop the first great insight of a spiritual journey. And you've all had it already, which is how difficult the mind is to control. The tendency of the mind to get lost, to wander. Very difficult to collect the attention. But if you go out to somebody in the street and ask them, oh, can you control your mind? Sure, I'm in control. People have no idea until we make the effort and we sit down and say, okay, pay attention to the breath, pay attention to the walking. It's not complicated, but it's very difficult to do. The mind is not trained. We feel a breath, or two breaths, three breaths if you're advanced. This is not exaggeration, as you know, you well know. What happens? Then the mind is seduced. It's seduced by thoughts and fantasies and daydreams, you know, and memories. And what's so amazing is that it doesn't even have to be pleasant. You know? We can sit here lost in the most unpleasant kinds of thoughts and feelings and dramas. The mind is so slippery. We give it a very simple object. The in-out, the rise and fall, the walking, very simple. But the mind is so slippery, it just keeps slipping right off. Now we hop on these trains of association. And it really is like a train of association. We hop on the train, we don't know that we've gotten on it, and we have no idea where the train is going. sometime down the track, sometime down the road, we sort of wake up, we get off the train, and find ourselves in a whole new world, a whole new drama. And sometimes it can be a real drama. We can find ourselves really caught or identified in some contraction of ego, of self, simply through this tendency of mind to get seduced, to get lost in these passing thoughts and images. Sometimes it reminds me, or I imagine, being in a movie theater, and we're sitting and watching the screen, and the movie changes every 2 minutes. That's our minds. So what would it be like? In a movie theater, it would drive us crazy. This is what is going on. Every few minutes, something else, something else, something else, something else. It's no wonder that people feel tired the first couple of days of a retreat. You know, becoming aware that this is what is actually going on. It is tiring. But as we practice, if people are persevering in the practice, something quite amazing begins to happen. And that is that the mind begins to get a little concentrated, begins to slow down that torrent of thoughts and images. They're still there, but instead of being so powerfully in the foreground, so loud and dominating in our minds, slowly the background foreground begins to shift, and the breath starts to be in the foreground, or the step starts to be in the foreground. The thoughts will still be there, and they'll be, you know, coming through, but we're not so gripped by them. We're not so carried away by them. They're a little softer, a little quieter. Our minds feel a little quieter. This is a huge step. Now, even the beginning taste of some calm and quiet in the mind is a huge discovery for us in our lives. We see that there is a capacity for some inner quiet. That we can do this. We can actually experience this kind of relief, this kind of inner relaxation. What's somewhat inspiring to me in all this is the fact that this is not a situation just of our time and place. Now, when you go back and you read the Buddha's teaching, he's talking about the same thing, exactly the same thing. I'll just read one short little part of a teaching. A wise person should pay attention to the mind, which is very difficult to perceive. It is extremely subtle and wanders wherever it pleases. The mind well guarded and trained will bring happiness. Your worst enemy cannot harm you as much as your own unguarded thoughts. And a well-directed mind creates more well-being than even the loving actions of parents towards their children. Tremendous power in our minds. Our minds can be our worst enemy and our best and most loving friend. Sitting and walking, that's the first form that we use. It's the first basic technique. Collecting the attention, calming the mind, creating some inner space. The second technique or form that we use on a retreat is that of slowing down. Slowing down our movements, slowing down our actions. Because as we slow down, we can begin to feel things and be with things more carefully, more precisely. We really begin to experience fully exactly what it is that's happening. But there's a delicacy to this, because sometimes people slow down and it's in the sense of holding themselves back, as if they're holding themselves in tight. Of course, if we slow down in that way, then we just get tense and we get tight and it's very frustrating. Slowing down doesn't mean kind of pulling the reins back. What it means is settling back. Not holding ourselves back, settling back into the moment. Very easy. We don't have to make a struggle of it. We settle back, and from that settled back place, we move with some grace, we move with some care. There is so much to observe. How many different movements are needed to open a door? To go from standing position to sitting position in the hall? Usually we come in, come to our cushion, sit down. Before we know it, we're already sat. Seated. There's a lot involved in sitting down. If we slow down, we can begin to feel all that. And some of you have probably witnessed the, or participated in the Japanese tea ceremony. It's very beautiful. Every movement in the ceremony, and the reason it is a ceremony, is that every movement is done with care. It becomes very beautiful. We can move on retreat in this way, and it's one of the gifts of a retreat. There is plenty of time. This is what there is to do. I read something once by Georgia O'Keeffe, was associated with a painting of a flower. It's a beautiful statement. She said, still in a way, nobody sees a flower, really. It is so small. We haven't time. And to see takes time, like to have a friend takes time. On the retreat, we have time. Take the time. Take the time to be with the small things, because the small things can reveal a whole world. So there's the form of sitting and walking. There's the form of slowing down, which allows us to be with things more carefully. There's a third technique, which is a powerful tool in the service of a careful investigation. And that is the technique of mental noting. It's very helpful to understand how this works, because the initial response to this tool is, I don't like it. Most yogis don't like to mental note, especially at first. It seems a nuisance, it seems to get in the way, it seems like the meditation would go better without this incessant noting in the mind. So what is it about? You know, why is it recommended? Why is it suggested? The noting in the mind, when it's done properly, and one has to learn how to do it properly, it fosters a quality of exactness, a quality of precision. The note is like a frame around a picture. We put a frame around a picture in order to see the picture more carefully, more clearly. When we're noting each moment of experience, in, out, thinking, feeling, and especially as more objects are included in the practice, the noting makes our attention very precise. We know exactly what it is that's going on. There's a tremendous beauty in the clarity of awareness. But there's a kind of meditative disease which, the name of this disease is more or less mindfulness. You know, we're going along through the day and the sitting and the walking, we're more or less mindful. We're kind of there, you know, we sort of know that the breath is happening or the movement is happening, but we're not exactly present. We're not exactly and precisely there. The noting helps us make this shift from more or less mindfulness to exact mindfulness. It's like focusing a microscope. When it's out of focus, you may know that something is there, but when it comes into focus, that's where the clarity is. That's where the understanding is. The noting can be done in many different ways, and you need to experiment with it. It's not a rigid, fixed tool. There's a lot of flexibility. Some different ways you might try with the noting. Sometimes people note right at the beginning of the experience, like the beginning of the breath, short note, and then just are simply with the experience till the end. That's one way, a short note right at the beginning. Sometimes people find it helpful to cover the experience with the note. Just like a pot cover fits securely on the pot, the note can cover the whole breath, and some people find that very helpful so the mind doesn't wander. There's no room to wander. So you would draw out the note. Some people have found it helpful to repeat the note in for the duration of the breath as a way of keeping the mind steady. Sometimes just the initial of the note will do. For a while, I was just, when I was watching Rising and Falling, I was noting R, F, R, F. Play with it. Play with this tool of a mental note in whatever way you find helpful and see how it helps you to be more precise with what is going on. The key to all of these ways of noting is doing it softly. Let it be like a whisper in the mind, very, very soft. So these are some of the tools we use in the science of the mind, tools of sitting and walking, that discipline, the simplicity of it, tools of slowing down so that there can be a care with what we do. The small things, the little things we begin to pay attention to. And to use the tool of mental noting. So we begin to see very exactly the nature of the body, the nature of the mind. This is the first perspective on practice, the science of meditation.